Chapter 21. The Year of Dwarvenkind Reborn. Dale Reckoning, 1488. The Danger. The Thrill. "The retrievers are indestructible," Brother Afafrenfir said to Evenel. He had coaxed her out alone, asking more about the end of Drizzt. "Almost," the drow woman answered. "The dwarves here dumped one into the chasm with a fire primordial. I know not if it is thus destroyed, but that was some time ago, and they have not seen it. That one was targeted for Zaknafane, we are certain, and he remains within the complex. If it was still surviving, it would be trying to climb out." "So it was destroyed?" "That would be my guess." "And the one chasing Drizzt, is it possible that he destroyed it?" The woman shook her head, but answered, "Anything is possible. But where is Drizzt, then?" "You think him dead, or taken to the abyss with the golem?" "That seems most likely." Evenel cocked her head a bit to study the monk. "What are you thinking, monk?" Now it was Afafrenfir's turn to shake his head. "I do not know, but I must find this place." "Thornhold?" "The fortress of Drizzt's apparent last stand, yes." "It is a long way," Evenel replied. "Perhaps hundreds of miles, and none will be more difficult than the first. Get me out of here. Just pass the demons and the drow on the surface, I beg of you," Afafrenfir said. "Tell me why." "I do not know that you would understand." "Brother, my memories date back millennia to the founding of Menzoberranzan," the drow explained. "I have been to the Abyss and the Nine Hells. I have roamed Tartarus and battled Celestials. I am the reincarnation of all the lessons learned by Matron Mother Evenel the Eternal. Her memories gifted to me by an Illithid when I was still in my mother's womb. More recently, on my own, I led the defeat and destruction of the corporeal form of Demogorgon. There is much about the multiverse I do not understand. It is a nearly infinitely wide place, after all. But I assure you that there is more I could tell you that you would not understand than this issue now before us. You ask me for help. And so, as I am friend to the dwarves here and to the man you sought, I will help you. As soon as you convince me that you are deserving of my help, and that there may be some gain to my efforts." Brother Afafrenfir thought it over for a few moments, then nodded. "Let me tell you of Grand Master of Flowers Cain," he said. "Let me tell you of a fight I shared with him, he within me in a willing co-possession of my physical being, against a white dragon above the mountains of the Silver Marches." "This is untenable," Yakardaria said to Matron Jindia. The two handmaidens and the drow commanders had gathered in the house in Bleeding Vines that Matron Jindia had taken as her command post, to evaluate the situation and plot their next moves. Surprising the mortal drow, Yakardaria and Escavidni had come in once more intent on rehashing the past. The disposition of the retrievers, the apparent success of one, the miserable failure of the other. "These valued weapons were given to you with the expectation of care, matron," Yakardaria said, and her tone sounded as a great threat to all around the table. "They were given to me as indestructible weapons with singular purpose," Jindia replied, trying to sound equally as aggressive for reasons obvious to all. "Under your command," Yakardaria silenced her. It was always assumed that Matron Jindia would exercise wisdom and temperance in deploying the constructs, Escavidni added. Jindia stuttered over her words for some time, flabbergasted that they were even talking about this again. Immediately following the handmaiden's explanation of the retriever's outcomes the last time, after all, Escavidni and Yakardaria had then opened the magical gate to bring back the many long-dead driders, putting them at Jindia's disposal. So why now? Why were these two, particularly Yakardaria, determined to replay the conversation about the retrievers, and this time point fingers of blame. Matron Jindia wasn't sure of the answer to that, but she certainly understood the potential implications if the accusation gained any traction. She took a deep breath and said calmly, "I brought the retrievers to the surface in my march, as instructed, and turned them loose to fulfill their destiny, one determined by others. You two? Lady Loth herself? Could I have stopped them from pursuing their targets had I tried? Would that not have made me, and those I assigned to the task, obstacles to the retriever's sole and compelled goal? And we all know what retrievers do to those who impede their mission." "But did you aid their mission?" Yikardaria pressed. "What would you have had me do? Send my forces deep into Gontalgrim or spread them far and wide to the Sword Coast to chase the construct pursuing the heretic Drizzt? They had singular goals. I have a war to win." "At least she admits her tactics, and thus her failing," Escavidny said to her peer, and Yikardaria nodded. Matron Jindia barely contained her snarl. "It is not so terrible an ordeal for you, Matron Jindia, and surely you can repair the damage you have wrought," Escavidny told the woman. Jindia's eyes narrowed, her jaw clenched. It took all of her willpower then and a constant inner reminder that these were representatives of the Spider Queen, whose blessing was all that really mattered to her, to hold back her curses and her orders to her companions to properly send these two back to the swirling mists of the abyss. "A retriever is destroyed after its mission is complete in any case," Escavidny went on. "The loss is not important. It is the loss without the gain of the target that matters and reflects badly. Drizzt Do'Urden is removed, but Zachnephane Do'Urden remains. Correct that, and this conversation will be forgotten, of course." "Of course," Yikardaria echoed. "It would also be best if you captured Zachnephane and bring us to your side, that we may more fully bless the ritual as you give him to Loth." Jindia couldn't hide her curiosity from her expression here, she knew, but so be it. It made sense that the handmaidens would wish to be around to witness such a grand gift to Loth, of course. But there was something about the way Yikardaria had issued her demand, some extra bit of enthusiasm, perhaps, that made the perceptive and always suspicious matron wonder if there was more to this than the simple execution of a heretic. As far as Matron Jindia knew, it remained a mystery of how Zachnephane had returned to life, of which divine being had for some reason thought it wise to bring him back from a well-deserved grave. What was she missing here? What motivation beyond this way and Matron Jindia's campaign to destroy the heretics had brought her the two handmaidens and their generous offers, first the retrievers and then the driders? There were always webs of intrigue with the drow, more so with those demons surrounding Loth, and most so with Loth herself. It was their way, and therefore Jindia could still take heart that her victory here was greatly desired, and it would be one realized with the full blessing of Loth. There was something more, though. Probably many things, and one in particular concerning Zachnephane Do'Urden. It was likely irrelevant to her, or would have been, had not the handmaidens just blamed the loss of the retriever on Jindia to compel her to handle Zachnephane as they had demanded. But even so, it was always wise for a drow to search as deeply into the webbing as was possible. "I would like nothing more than to plunge the sacrificial dagger into the chest of Zachnephane Do'Urden, handmaiden," she answered, "and honestly. And when I do, having Yikardaria and Escavidny beside me, sharing in the prayers to Lady Loth would make it all the more glorious." "You need to press them, matron," Yikardaria said. "Harder. Take the halls and hold the halls. Catch and kill their leaders. Secure this place, and while doing so, eliminate the heretic Zachnephane to repent your failure with the retriever." Matron Jindia bit back her retort, but neither did she verbally, openly, before these other witnesses, agree with the advice. "You would have me send in the driders?" "No," Escavidny blurted before Yikardaria could answer. No, the Driders are for maintaining that which you win. You have demons, use them, even the major fiends. A great and magnificent push to purge this place of the dwarven plague. Go and claim the first part of your kingdom. Around the table, other drow cheered, and Jindia joined in. In her thoughts, though, she wasn't so thrilled with the command. Holding back the major demons had been a wise course, one that ensured victory, even though it delayed the outcome. The major demons were doing no more than using their energies and magical powers to open gates to the abyss, to bring in reinforcements, to throw against the battle-weary dwarves. They were getting very restless, so much so that more than one had gone into the fray anyway. But it was working. Time is our greatest ally, she reminded. Not so, Escavidney replied. To an extent, yes. And until the time to fully engage was at hand, it surely was. But we are in the realm of humans, and they may soon wake to the truth of that which is happening here and come against you in great numbers. And I do not discount the resourcefulness of King Brunner and his companions. Perhaps they will find a way to open their gates as they intended, and in that event, dwarven armies will come against you. Thousands of shield dwarves, armed in the east and ready to do battle. Jindia nodded. What choice did she have? This wasn't an argument she wanted to wage, especially knowing that to lose it could mean losing the favor of Lolth. Aloud, at least. Because there was more to it all, she knew. She wanted to uncover that. She needed to see the lower strands of this still-weaving web, to figure out a way to make it take the shape she wanted. From the moment he had come out of the wind-like state of Ivanel's spell and bid farewell to the remarkable drow, Brother Afafrenfir had begun his run. It had been a weave over those first few hours, as he cleared the outer perimeter of the occupying drow force, zigzagging about encampments and patrols of those huge, half-drow, half-spider abominations. He had been seen only once, a Drider calling out the alarm and launching its spear at him, a missile Afafrenfir had caught and thrown back in one single fluid motion, even scoring a hit on the original thrower, though not enough to dispatch the monstrous beast. It had given chase, its companions had joined in, and the monk, having no desire to engage out here, had fled with all speed. Driders were swift creatures and tireless. A normal human would have little chance of outrunning one. Afafrenfir, though, was not normal in this regard. He was a monk of the Order of St. Solars, an aesthetic, dedicating his entire life to wholeness of body and mind, a man who had learned through endless training to channel the energy of his very spirit into the honed muscles and joints of his physical being. Afafrenfir was master of the East Wind, a very high title, a very high rank, a testament to his dedication, his skill, his discipline. Few could outrun a monk. Fewer still one as skilled as Brother Afafrenfir. He sped away from the Driders, moving swiftly beyond their reach, and, unlike a normal man, he did not quickly tire in his sprint. Brother Afafrenfir had put many miles between himself and Gauntlegrim before pausing to take a brief rest, with no sign of the pursuing monsters anywhere to be found. After only that short rest, he went on his way again, moving deep into the night, climbing the tallest nearby crag to gain some perspective, he hoped. On the journey before and behind. On the eastern side of that tall mound, he found a sheer drop to a rocky ravine. Afafrenfir nodded at his good fortune. He jumped from the cliff. Hands and feet working miraculously, the monk descended hundreds of feet in short order, touching down in a rolling landing that absorbed most of the shock of the fall, leaving him with only a few bruises down a descent that no one who did not understand the ways of the monk would believe a human could survive. There, confident that he had shaken any chance of pursuit, Afafrenfir took his first rest. He awakened with the dawn and began his run once more, straight now into the rising sun. He didn't know exactly how far he had gone, but Afafrenfir guessed it was well more than 200 miles from the gates of Gauntlegrim to Thornhold, as Ivanel had warned. Brother Afafrenfir approached the ruins only 5 days from his departure. He went through the gate and found the scar of the retriever easily enough. He did a quick scan before dropping to a cross-legged sitting position, hands on his knees, palms facing upward, where he fell into a deep, deep meditation, a joining of all that was around him on a level something more than his physical senses could tell him. He searched for a ghost. Several times, he thought he had found some measure of one, a wayward thought, a momentary inspiration or observation that seemed exterior to him. Perhaps the remnants of Drizzt? He desperately wanted Grandmaster Kane's observations of transcendence to prove true, and to prove the work of his drow friend. Even so, however, Afafrenfir knew that it had been a while since that occurrence Kane had sensed. Too long, almost certainly. Still, he had to know the truth of it, to offer peace to Caddy Bree and the other companions of the hall, if nothing more. Determined, he sat there, and he opened his mind, his heart, his spirit, and became a being of pure receptiveness, hearing every sound, smell, whisper, sensation of the region about Thornhold. It was hard to discern the physical from the spiritual in such a state, and thus was Afafrenfir caught off his guard when at last he opened his eyes to find himself surrounded by a group of armed, armored, and indisputably angry dwarves. "Kill him!" was the first thing Afafrenfir heard clearly from one of them. And the last.
"That was a dangerous ploy, sister,"
Escavidney said to Yekardaria when they were alone, though still on the material plane. They were in their natural, roper-like state, their voices bubbling and popping like hot mud, their language that of the Yokluls, so that, if they were overheard, they would not likely be understood.
"Shindia tarries too long now," Yekardaria returned. "I fear that the gains will be short-lived."
"Gains, sister? What gains concern us or Lady Loth?"
Yekardaria spun about, her appendages waving in protest.
"There was only one gain for you here, and it is done or it is not. As of now, it is not," said Escavidney.
Yekardaria's growl popped and grumbled like bubbling water.
"A dangerous ploy," Escavidney insisted, not backing down. "Shindia will likely soon commune with Loth, and Loth might not be pleased to learn of all we have done."
"Everything we have done is for chaos, and chaos serves Loth," Yekardaria retorted. It was true enough, mostly. And wasn't that at the heart of chaos anyway?
"It is not just the what, but the way," the other handmaiden replied. "Will Loth be pleased to learn that we were granted 2 retrievers from Malkinthet, Queen of the Succubi and consort of Demogorgon?"
"She will take pleasure that such constructs were given at Demogorgon's expense," reasoned Yekardaria, "and for reasons that support Loth and not Demogorgon."
"Do they support Loth? How do you know?"
"Sister,
we do not know Loth's feelings for Drizzt O'Erden," Escavidney said. "Ever has she been coy about that particularly minor player in her grand game.
She lost him to the goddess Mialiki."
"No, she lost him to herself."
"That is not the same thing.
Her strife with Mialiki was decided in the Cavern of the Primordial, the proxy battle of 2 women, Caddy Bree and Dahlia. As for Drizzt, she made her play on the tunnels far to the east and was denied.
And so he deserved to die."
"You do not know this. Perhaps Lady Loth saw that he would weaken and submit in time."
"With Zacnaphane his father returned?"
Yekardaria's sarcasm ended with a roll of popping mud bubbles deep in her throat, as if her physical being itself was mocking Escavidney's claim.
"Returned by whom?" Escavidney promptly stopped her.
"We do not know."
The two faced each other silently for a long while.
"The Spider Queen cannot be angry," Yekardaria at last offered. "Heretics both."
Do you really want to find out?
My memory is long, sister, and emboldened Yikardaria insisted. I have not forgotten the insult.
He thought you a rival drow.
No, he knew. When he continued his assault, he knew. Zaknafane the heretic murdered a handmaiden of Loth, and she, I, do not quickly forget and never forgive.
I will have Zaknafane, sister. He cannot be rewarded. He cannot be redeemed to Loth. I will have him in the abyss, and there I will torment him for eternity.
The rest of the powers of Menzel Berenzon have come, Escavidney reminded. Do you think Quenthel will side with Jindia or battle her?
We settled that question by giving Jindia the Driders.
Quenthel will recognize them as the futility of any resistance she might offer.
Only if she thinks them Loth bestowed.
Who else could have done it?
An angry handmaiden who had the keys to their abyssal cages, of course. The Yoklo Yikardaria smiled, the ends of her maw turning up, then dripping back down her melted form.
A possibility even Quenthel Bayenri cannot understand, she said confidently.
Escavidney said no more, but neither was she fully convinced. The two had been having grand fun at the beginning of this all, urging on Jindia Malarn while teasing the Bayenris, even in supporting Jindia's threat against Archmage Gromph. It was all chaos, all play. Except for the retrievers, an offer that Yikardaria had leaped at without consulting her companion in the game. Malkinthet was a clever one with a long memory and knew exactly how to approach angry Yikardaria with just the right bait.
But why?
Yikardaria was convinced that Malkinthet thought she would be hurting Loth by killing the two heretics, or possibly, in a completely different direction of motivation. Perhaps it was a peace offering to the Spider Queen, after her drow minions had so fully disembodied Demogorgon at the gates of Menzel Berenzon. A peace offering? Or a misaimed attempt at payback? Did it matter? Perhaps it did matter, was Escavidney's fear now, and seeing Yikardaria, who was usually so clever and calculating, beginning to take this entire game so personally was beginning to unnerve her. Yes, part of the impetus for initiating the play was Yikardaria's desire to pay back Zaknafane for a long-ago injustice. That had always been true. But now that the game had advanced, now that the retriever had failed, it seemed to Escavidney that the stakes had been raised, and that Yikardaria was now taking the defeat of the retriever as yet another personal affront against her by Zaknafane Doerden. That was the thrill of chaos, she told herself to calm down. Unleashed, it would lead to unforeseen outcomes, sometimes minor, sometimes, as seemed quite possible now, quite major. That was the thrill. That was the danger. Escavidney looked at her sister and smiled, letting the thrill overcome her fears.